Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point. We celebrate teenage years and look on them in amazement, sometimes horror. In the doing, the living, they are thrilling, sometimes torturous. Looking back, they can be downright mortifying. A popular storytelling project spreading around the country now encourages us to look back, to dust off the old diaries, snapshots, poems, memories. It's called Mortified. This hour On Point, looking back with fondness and horror on teenage years. Joining me now from Culver City, California, is David Nadelberg. In 2002, he rediscovered an awkward love letter penned to a high school classmate. And the storytelling project Mortified was born. For the past 8 years, he's led its evolution, including sold-out events across the country, 2 books, Get Mortified 2, a web series, and now a movie in the making. David Nadelberg, welcome to On Point.
Hi, Tom.
It's great to have you with us. And with us as well from San Francisco, Sarah Faith Alterman, author and co-producer of the Boston Chapter. They've got chapters of Mortified. She's an occasional performer, sharer with the project herself, Sarah Faith Alterman. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, Tom. Thanks for having me.
David, what did you stumble onto here?
A very strange accident. basically a project where we've invited seemingly sane adults to get up on stage or in the form of our books to publish their most embarrassing childhood artifacts, things like their letters, lyrics, journals, home movies, and share them with total strangers. In the case of our stage shows in nightclubs and across America.
And what is it that people tend to be, mortified about as opposed to fond of in their memory or proud of in their memory? What emerges on the mortification front from teenage years?
I think it's both. I think we look at the way our audience should react to the pieces in the show is that they're laughing at the past, but they're also rooting for that kid who's being chronicled in the pages of those diaries. And I think we like to have that distance, as adults from the awkward idiot that we once were. But we're also comforted by knowing that, we're still that person.
Sarah, when you tap back to those teenage years, what do you find? Does mortification gush out? Is it, nonstop? I'm mortified by what I was then or something else?
Oh, absolutely. I find it really hard to go back and look at my diaries from when I was a kid because I still get that sort of cringing feeling. I feel like I become a teenager again when I'm reading all those words that I wrote as a kid. But I think Dave really hit it on the head. One of the reasons why I think this project is so successful is because the participants all turned out okay. We all kind of survived that teen angst. So as cringeworthy as our teenage years were, I feel like the real beauty of the show is that people were able to transcend that mortification, if you will, and really thrive as functioning happy adults.
We're throwing the lines wide open for your teenage stories of mortification this hour. We're going to hear some from a show, a Get Mortified show in Boston just last week, but we've got callers already with their mortifying stories of teenage life. Chloe in Windham, Massachusetts. Chloe, you're on the air.
Hi, how are you?
Great. What's your story?
When I was about 19, I answered an ad in the paper for a nude model for an art class.
Okay. You're brave. How'd it go?
It went very badly because I had never done it. And when I got to the gymnasium where the class was, I didn't have a robe.
Did you say gymnasium? Got a concert scale audience for your first nude modeling job?
Yes. And she gave me this little yellow raincoat. And I had to take all my clothes off and go across the entire gym in this little rubber raincoat. And then I had to get on a stage and the whole class was all around me. And my butt started to twitch right away. So I started breathing deeply to make my butt stop twitching. And then the next thing you know, I woke up with my head in someone's lap with the entire class looking at me because I had passed out.
Okay, there's a little teenage mortification on a scale of 1 to 10 in Get Mortified Land, David. How does that one rate?
Well, I'm just trying to imagine how the artists in that class were trying to keep up with the twitching. if you're there to capture still life, was it just sort of like a blurry butt?
I think we've lost our new model, but that's a great story, Chloe. I really. Oh, maybe you're there, Chloe. What do you say? How did they get a still life with you twitching on stage and passed out?
I only lasted about a minute and a half. It was. They called an ambulance and everything. It was awful.
We appreciate your story. That's pretty great. I want to get one just from last Friday night. This is in the performance in Boston. My producer, Ping Wong, and our intern, Mackenzie Knowles-Corson, went out and made some audio. And here's one from that performance. Here's Stacy, who as a teenager was frustrated with her G-rated life. She made a list of things she wanted to accomplish. She wrote it down in her diary when she was 15 years old. Here she is reciting at Mortified.
Number one, go to a karaoke bar and sing. Number two, pick up some guy at a bar and have a one-night fling with him. Number three, get incredibly drunk. Number four, go parasailing. Number five, go on a roller coaster. Number six, get all dressed up, go into a room in a hotel with a party going on, and see if anyone notices you shouldn't be there. Number seven, go skinny dipping. Number eight, make the first move. Number nine, go to a strip club. Number 10, get an apartment with a huge dog and decorate it. Number 11, be a prostitute for the evening.
Okay, Stacy, that's just last week. She was 15 in that diary. And Sarah, there's this wonderful yearning there between things so simple, you know, decorate an apartment, go on a roller coaster, and then 15-year-old Stacy wants to get racy in a hurry.
I think that's one of my favorite things about Stacy's piece is that in the same breath and with the same sort of awe as a 15-year-old, she's talking about wanting to go parasailing and be a prostitute for the evening, kind of in the same breath. And it just reminds me that, you know, when I was a teenager, I kind of put all these big otherworldly things into the same category, too. I just think, like, we all sort of did, right? We all, as teenagers, looked at the world with these huge wide eyes and looked at the experiences we hadn't had as something to really aspire to. And I guess Stacy had big goals.
Such simple longings and then pretty racy longings. I mean, David, I guess that's part, maybe that's part of what's mortified. And that it's all mixed up together there. The dreams of childhood and then the yearnings of adulthood all at once.
Yeah, I mean, I think kids just don't have an ability to discern. I mean, I think because we're young and sort of, we approach the world as though it's this, you know, giant force, and plus our hormones at that age are just, you know, encouraging us to be more melodramatic. And so things will happen that, you know, we'll think that the importance of getting asked to prom is just as important as, you know, some news event we're talking about. In fact, in our first book, Mortified, Real Words, Real People, Real Pathetic, there's this piece, diaries from this girl, Vanessa Murdoch, who she was obsessed with New Kids on the Block, and her diaries alter, and it's around the time of the first Gulf War, and her diaries alternate page after page between her obsession with Joey McIntyre, you know, dear diary, I love him, and when he comes to town for a concert, I'm going to make him mine. And then they alternate the next page with her fears about the Gulf War and how death is really concerning her. And then back to Joey McIntyre and that inability to discern.
It's all
what's
there,
important.
It's all there together. I want to get just as many callers as we can this hour. Andrew in Buffalo, New York. Andrew, we've just got a couple minutes before the break. You're on the air. What have you got?
Hello, how are you? I was a freshman in high school, and I met the beautiful girl of the class.
Oh yeah,
enamored with her, and I was not a very discreet person like I am now, and I decided to call her and sing Do You Want to Know a Secret by the Beatles to her.
The whole song on the telephone?
Just, you know, a couple of stanzas, yep.
Could you sing us a couple stanzas right now, Andrew? I don't remember that. How's it go? I don't remember.
No, I'm not doing it, no. But she said it was very cute, and she was giggling, and her best friend was there, you know, spending the afternoon with her. So she was giggling, too, and it was a small school, and just let's say it got around the school by the next morning, and it took, you know, 2-3 years to get to know my friends again, because it was just unbearable for a while.
You were a brave boy, singing, Do You Want to Know a Secret? Just give us a couple of bars. I forget how that one goes, Andrew.
It'll be very romantic.
Yeah, no, I mean, and you know what the funny thing was?
Refused.
It was a small school.
Yeah.
It worked out, and I went to her graduation party when we graduated, and she kissed me goodbye, so.
Nice.
And you still remember that kiss?
Oh, absolutely. Oh, yeah, she was still beautiful, so.
The kiss?
She probably still is. I hope she's not listening, though.
The kiss and the shame, it's all there. Andrew, I really appreciate your call. David Nadelberg founded Mortify, the storytelling project, in 2002. They've got books and web series and movie coming out now. We're going to hear much more about it. Sarah Faith Alterman has done it. She shared in that forum. Maybe we'll hear some of that. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. David, how's it work? At your chapters around the country, you've got, is it open mic nights, or do you screen for who comes in and tells their stories? How's it go?
Yeah, actually, all of our shows are heavily curated. And so basically, people just log on. They go to getmortified.com, mm-hmm. and they click the word participate, and it basically sends us a request form to meet. And basically we meet with everybody and we have kind of something like a therapy session where they bring their old diaries or love letters or poems or something, some artifact of their past. And we listen to it and we talk to them. And then we kind of help them workshop a piece eventually for the stage. But the rules are, you know, we don't rewrite the pieces, and it's, you know, nothing added in terms of, there's no fictionalizing. And then, you know, maybe a couple weeks later or a few months later, they're on stage humiliating themselves in the best possible manner in front of an audience of a few hundred people.
And a lot of it comes straight out of those teenage diaries, again, from the Boston performance last week. Here's one. This is from Caitlin, performing at Mortified, recounting her short teenage fascination with the novel The Mists of Avalon, and druids and fairies and all things medieval, including her visit to a medieval fair in 1995. Here's her October 15th, 1995 diary entry.
October 15th, 1995. Today I went with Lily and Leslie to King Richard's Fair. It was awesome. The whole fair takes place in a forest, and there are so many people dressed up in medieval clothes who speak to you in that dialect and say, "Good day, my lady." It was so cool. I really felt like I was transported back in time. I would have loved to live in that time period. Maybe I did. Lily and I both bought these beautiful necklaces. It's a pentacle of the goddess. It's really great because it doesn't look exactly like a pentacle, so I can wear it around without people thinking I'm a devil worshiper. It just feels so right to have it. And the guy who worked there was so cool. He did most of the research for it and designed it. There are hidden inscribed runes in it that symbolize love, passion, and joy. The guy was really cool. He really knew what he was talking about.
There's Caitlin from Mortified just last week. I don't know, Sarah, is that mortifying or is that just...
Well, I have to confess, Caitlin and I actually grew up together, so I knew her when she was writing all of this stuff.
Ah, did you know she was a closet druid in those days?
I had no idea, and I think that's one of the things that's so funny about it is that... you know, as a teenager, I remember just her as being this cool, fun, interesting girl. I had no idea she sort of harbored this secret life as a reincarnated
time traveler.
She's a time traveler, apparently. She's
yeah, but are teenagers kind of too easy in a mark here? I mean, I've been to a few medieval fairs with teenagers, you know, driving, dad delivering. And I see all kinds of adults there getting you way yeah. more druidy than most of the teenagers I see. I mean, is it too easy to go after our teenage selves, David?
Well, I feel like we're not really necessarily going after them to make mm-hmm. fun of them. I think mm-hmm. we want to sort of embrace the pathos that you know, people were experiencing as teenagers. And I also, I don't know, I feel like, well, I'm Dave, maybe you can better answer this question because I feel like it's a positive thing to actually embrace our sort of inner teenage selves.
I think you're doing perfectly. Yeah, I think I completely agree with that. I think there's something really healthy in terms of embracing who we were, especially when we're embracing that warts and all, or more mm-hmm. just warts.
I mean, I think part of the laughter in that reading on the medieval diary is the teenager is willing to say it, willing to write it down, willing to mm-hmm. just freely express that enthusiasm for fairies and druids and all the rest, yeah. which is quite wonderful. Maybe it's mortifying, or maybe it's wonderful. Maybe it's both. Miriam in Salt Lake City, Utah. Miriam, you're on the air. What have you got?
Hi. Actually, while I was on hold, I realized that Miriam and mortified start with the same letter.
Okay. We're all ears. Okay. What's your story?
Is that your mortifying?
The one I told your producer is like not even the one that came close, but one that happened. I was in choir. I had gone to high school in ninth grade for music and the program. And I was off in the corner kind of, you know, la-la-lying and trying to tune up. And one of the guys looked around and said, "Hey, Miriam, you're flat." And another guy said, "Oh, no, she's not."
Oh. Oh, woohoo! Growing up, growing out.
Oh,
never had a problem. But I will say that thanks to Facebook, I have found so many of my high school friends, including my very first high school sweetheart boyfriend, you know, in love with forever. And he totally broke my heart when we broke up because I never knew why. After we found each other and started talking, I said, "I never knew why we broke up." And he said, "I was moving." And I said, "You never told me."
You just left high school and was gone. Is this the boyfriend you broke up with right before prom, Miriam?
No. It was a different one.
What about your
about
prom on a motorcycle? I'm being told you've got a story there. What?
I did. Another boyfriend and I broke up right before prom. I wound up asking one of my really geeky, you know, goofy friends mm-hmm. if he would take me. I had this beautiful prom gown, and we went on a motorcycle, and the end got caught, and it got ripped off, and I just couldn't stay very long. It was awful.
Just too much. The prom dress, half left on the motorcycle spokes there.
Maybe not half, but about a quarter, yeah.
Enough to be mortified. Then, Miriam, thanks for your call. We've got a... we've got a prom poem here. This is Neil. Prom is a fantasy. Neil's poem from a rough prom experience in his teenage years. This, again, is just from last Friday night, a mortified reading.
So this first poem I wrote after my senior year crush decided to go with someone else to the prom. It's okay. It's called Prom is a Fantasy. You should go to prom. You should also go to college, get a well-paying job, get married to the opposite sex, have at least two children, live in a white house with a white picket fence, and have a dog named Spot. This used to be called the American Dream. But a dream is exactly what this is. Why should we subject ourselves to this cruel and unjustified myth? The American reality is that everyone has different tastes and styles. And for this reason, we must each set our own goals. If one's reason to go to the prom is just so they can say that they went, maybe they should look at how much they're letting society dictate their actions. So after all that, what do you think I did? I went to my prom.
And there it is, that kind of exquisite self-pitying bitterness when you learn just how rough life can be, Sarah, there.
Yeah, it's funny. I remember being angry at the world when I was a teenager and thinking that nobody understood me and thinking that I was better than everyone and cooler than everyone on the inside. And on the outside, I was really this, you know, gawky, awkward, chubby kid. And it's actually
real.
Yeah, I'm super hot. It's all fine.
Oh, yeah.
I feel like, though, one of the things I love about the show and just being there and listening to people is I think, oh, man, I wasn't the only one. It's so satisfying and so comforting to know that I was not the only teenager in the world who felt misunderstood and felt a sort of anger against the world, but still embodied this kind of hypocrisy of, I hate prom, but I really hope someone asks me to prom.
Right, please, I hate it, but I got to go.
Exactly.
David, does everybody have their diaries somewhere, you know, in mom and dad's attic or, I don't know, maybe old email? Are they still out there? Do people dig them up and really find them?
Absolutely. You know, and even the advent of blogs and all that kind of things has not stopped anything. You know, everybody has some sort of artifact of their past, be it a diary or be it, you know, a play you wrote or a really, really lousy poem, or maybe you tried to write heavy metal lyrics when you were 14. I'm just saying that could happen to someone, not me. But it could. I think everybody, at some point has created these things. And whether they're sort of left over and sitting around in a shoebox or something depends on basically how good your mother is at cleaning. But
right.
But many people have this stuff, yeah.
I love, here's a little bit more of a racy Stacy. This is when Stacy was 14-year-old, and she informs her diary. This is from last Friday. She informs her diary. By the way, I should say the full-length performances are up at our website, onpointradio.org, from the Boston performance last week. You may find them around the country, maybe right where you're listening as well. But here's Stacy, and she's going to star in the high school play, which requires some exciting, you know, interaction, character interaction. And she's ready to do anything for that career, apparently. Here she is reading from that old diary last Friday.
March 14th. Guess what's going to happen soon? My first kiss. I know I always didn't play Spin the Bottle or Truth or Dare because I wanted my first kiss to be romantic with someone I loved. But some things you have to sacrifice for a career in the theater.
Rosie Stacy will take that kiss on stage if necessary. Let's get a call from New Harmony, Indiana. Laura, you're on the air, Laura. Thanks for calling.
Hi, Tom.
Hi. What do you know? What's your story?
I think this is a great opportunity for a confession.
Okay, we'll take it.
Okay, I was a freshman in college and had a huge crush on a handsome, polished anthropologist.
Mm.
He invited me to the anthropology lab for a date, and he got a phone call when I got there, so I was trying to appear casual and
sure.
just sort of sat back, propped my feet up on a little stool, and I noticed that there was something sticking out of the bottom of my pant leg. Well, he got off the phone before I could investigate, sat on the little stool near my feet, and before I could figure out a way to get to that thing,
yes.
he saw it and grabbed it. And it was a giant pair of granny panties that were stuck in my jeans from the dryer. So I was so mortified, I just grabbed them and I ran out of the anthropology lab and figured that was that. But later I found out that he had good humor about it and was trying to make me feel better and walked around the whole next day on campus with a pair of underwear up his sleeve, hoping to see me.
Did he win you back from your mortification with his granny panties there, Laura?
Well, we got over it, sort of. But years later, I walked into his office and told his secretary who I was, and she said, I think I know you. Did you have some sort of history with underwear?
Oh, man. That's pretty good. No time to reach down. You're pantsed before the first date can even unfold. Oh, I love it.
Look, do you have some sort of panties? They had to be these giant ones that weren't even mine.
Oh, that's
sure they weren't.
Stuck from the dryer static. You know, that'll get you every time. That's just great.
But he asked you to a date in an anthropology lab.
Yes.
So he couldn't have been much of a catch in the first place.
Well, maybe it's come up and see my etchings or my, Pleistocene skull.
Oh, yeah. I always say that.
Yeah, people always say that. Laura, I appreciate your story very much. That's just great. There's also this wonderful kind of seriousness that you get across in some of these. David, Sarah, this is from one of your readers last week. This is David at a mortified reading, and he decides to begin a diary, his book, after a particularly formative summer at band camp. Here's his first entry.
July 22nd, 1995. Here begins the recorded stage of my life. I hope this book will not merely be a piece of crap I'll look at when I'm 50 and starving to relive my formative years, searching for the good parts, but rather an example of how far I've come. Or not. Or whatever.
He starts out as Balzac in the making, and he ends up as Napoleon Bonaparte. I mean, Dynamite, Napoleon Dynamite there. Well, that's great. Who gets up on stage, Sarah, when you put these on? I mean, is there a profile here? Is it people who got over it or people who are still tortured by it?
So one of the great things about Boston is that it's a city just full of really smart people who totally understand the sensibility of this project. So we tend to attract readers and an audience, actually, who understand it on a deeper level. So and people who for the most part, don't have a lot of public speaking or performance experience. So we get, you know, copywriters, we've got doctors, we've got journalists, we've got librarians, we've got all kinds of people who in their sort of day jobs and their real lives don't generally make a spectacle of themselves. Mm. And then, you know, they have this alter ego where they get a chance to hop up on stage and just kind of let it all out. And I think that's really the beauty of the project is that you don't have to be. In fact, we'd prefer that you not be someone who's a kind of seasoned veteran of the stage because it really enhances the awkwardness of the whole experience.
Which is part of its delicious glory. David, you've seen a lot of these performances over the years. Give us some that's, I don't know, what stands out for you? What stories stuck with you?
Oh, God, so many. I can tell you that the pieces that I'm always fascinated by are the ones that are, you know, mix comedy with, you know, real heart and pathos where you're really kind of feeling for the kid, though. I can tell you, you know, we have a show next week in Los Angeles. Mm-hmm. Sorry, I forgot the name of the town that I'm actually sitting in. Right now.
When you live in, yeah.
A little mortified on the radio. And we have a piece that we're doing, you know, that I think is really fascinating. It's a piece that we originally found in our San Francisco show of a woman named Jessica who has these diaries of when her parents got divorced. Her mom wound up having to take a job as a cleaning lady. And the mom, mm-hmm. You know, basically said to her, "I need, you know, you to basically join me on job." And so she winds up writing these diary entries about how she's helping her mom as a cleaning lady, and they're actually cleaning the houses of some of the richer, more popular girls in school. Just that, yeah, exactly.
Oh boy!
And it's really just like a fascinating peek, and that's what I like is that. Getting to peek into really different life experiences is one of the joys of Mortified. And there's obviously a real, you know, obviously they didn't have a lot of money. And so there's this sort of sadder undercurrent to that piece that's, I think, moves me a lot.
Yeah, I imagine that as a teenager. I mean, it's impossible and mortifying. And then looking back, heartrending all at the same time.
Yeah.
Yeah.
We've got a piece in Boston. We should hug. I'm hugging you right now. We've got a piece in Boston, this man named Steve who has diaries about coming out in the 1980s. And they are funny and beautiful and sort of bittersweet at the same time.
Here's a little bit more. We've just got a couple more of Racy Stacy, where teenage life begins to meet. This is from, I guess, again, probably the 90s. Begins to meet the online world, and of course, there are always girls and boys.
April 8th. I met the nicest boy online today. He is 13, in 7th grade, and lives in Fairfield, New Jersey. He has dirty blonde hair, brown eyes, and is 5'3" tall. He taught me to email. I need to mail him a letter. Some other kid said he was a horny guy looking for cyber sex. Online is so cool.
Stacey's is ready to rock it in the online age. And here's just a little bit more of that. I love it. Here's a little bit more of Stacey in her. This is early days online, I guess. AOL extravaganza.
I was in love with this guy, Ron, on AOL for a while. My first Valentine. He got me a present. We're still kind of in love, but it's cooling a little. AOL still rocks.
AOL still rocks. Loretta in Elizabeth City, North Carolina. Loretta, you're on the air. What's your story?
Yes, this is a great show.
Oh, great.
Thank you for taking my call. I live in Elizabeth City, but I am presently driving north to my Aunt Marie's funeral, an 89-year-old lady in Riverton, New Jersey, who died. So this is a story about an experience with her. When I was a teenager, I was invited to come to Surf City, New Jersey, to help Aunt Marie take care of her, I think, two children at that point, babysit the children. And babysitting one day, and there's my aunt is actually in the house in the kitchen, and there's a knock at the door, and I open the door, and there is this drop-dead gorgeous lifeguard standing there with a lifeguard shirt.
Okay.
He's probably in his 20s, just fabulous looking. And I'm this gawky, ugly, freckled, plump, you know, 13-year-old. And my mouth is probably, you know, probably drooling. And he has something in his hand that I guess I didn't notice, but he said to me, Miss, would you like to go to the fireman's ball? And I said, oh, my goodness, I would love to. Oh, my goodness, I don't think I have a dress to wear. What time will you be picking me up? And he said to me, oh, I'm sorry, I have two tickets. I wondered if you wanted to buy the tickets. And I said, you're not inviting me to the ball. And I started crying, and my Aunt Marie was standing behind me, laughing hysterically. I was mortified. I thought, the man of my dreams has walked into my life. And so anyway, I'm embarrassed telling this story, and it's a wonderful memory of my aunt, who I'm about to go to her funeral. So
that's all the better. And she comforted you right then and there in our sympathies.
Yes, she did. I owe her that. She sort of giggled about it, and then probably, you know, let me cry my eyes out because, you know, my life had ended. I was 13, and I had been rejected by this gorgeous man.
Well, she's well remembered in that story.
That's a great
beautiful
tribute.
Loretta. That's really great. That is a really great way to remember her and remember that mortification at the same time. I love that. I mean, Sarah, that, you know, we hear it there again. A teen's so ready for life, so ready to believe. And then, of course, the whacks come along with that.
Of course. I think when you're a teenager, the lows hit you really low and the highs hit you really high. So things that now as adults we'd be able to sort of take in stride are suddenly our worlds crumble around us and we just kind of sob because, you know, this boy embarrassed us in front of our aunt or what have you. And I feel like, I don't know, it's nice to be able to get some perspective on what was important as a teenager versus what in the grand scheme of things wasn't necessarily such a big deal, but at the time sort of shattered our entire existence.
Shattered when we were so ready to believe, so ready to be there. Hey, wait a minute, I'll find a dress. Barbara in Lexington, Massachusetts. Barbara, you're on the air.
Hi. This happened in 1957 or 58 when I was in high school, and it's snow on the ground, all dolled up with winter stuff, and we went straight from school into town. I was going to meet my older sister for a movie and supper. We went to Durgan Park, and after we ate, I went up to the restroom.
Yeah.
And coming down, there was a rail only on one side, and I was looking around down below me for some nice-looking guys. Well, I stepped forward, and the steps curved the opposite direction.
Yeah.
And I fell into the main dining room, books, bag open, spewing reinforcements, pens, pencils, and everything else under the tables.
Oh, my gosh. You fell right down the stairs in the middle of the restaurant.
Exactly.
Oh, boy.
And I ended
up with
a twisted...
So did they look at you?
Yeah. Did you get a date out of it?
No, I ended up with a very mad sister and a twisted ankle, and they sent me home in a cab,
boy.
I never got to the movie.
Yeah, there's the klutz story from the teenage years, or what, sort of so ready to get into things that we're not looking at practical things, David, like where the stairs are.
Yeah, apparently that's one of the things that teenagers can overlook. We're a little blind at that age.
I was curious earlier. We heard the bit from Stacey about AOL and meeting, you know, such a cute guy online. What happens as these memories move out of spiral-bound notebooks and, you know, little funny diaries that you got from your parents for your birthday, little diary books, to the web and Facebook and everything else that's public all the time? I mean, will it be the same in 10 years? Will people still have the same old treasuries of memories to look into?
My answer to that would be yes and no. Yes, in the sense of as, you know, many of the pieces that we're starting to do in the show as people of the internet generation age is that we're having, you know, we have emails and we have like early era blogs, like GeoCities type blogs and stuff being read aloud in our show. That said, I don't believe written stuff goes away. I also don't really believe blogs are replacements for diaries. Blogs are really more unpaid newspaper columns. You know what I mean? And there were magazine columns. And so,
and they're public from the beginning. So you're kind of self-editing the first time you write it.
Exactly. And so they're fine for what they are. But I think kids, kids today, I think scrapbooking and keeping diaries and writing poetry, you know, at night with a flashlight, you know, in your bedroom is something that kids still do and will forever do as long as there is pen and ink.
Mm-hmm. Sarah, yeah, I totally agree.
And you've shared up and stepped up and shared some of your mortifying memories, I think, Sarah. I mean, what kind of stories do you point to of your own?
Well, when I was a teenager, I grew up in a small town outside of Boston, and my parents were lovely but very strict people, and so they wanted to protect me from the world, so I wasn't allowed to do a lot of the sort of same things that a lot of my peers were. I couldn't, you know, date, I couldn't go in upperclassmen's cars, I couldn't go to football games, concerts, that kind of thing. So I ended up channeling my sort of teenage frustrations and my desire to be normal into letters, into a pretty elaborate fantasy world wherein I wrote letters to people that didn't exist. So I made up a boyfriend for myself, and I wrote him these torrid letters.
Boy. That are
just, they're peppered with SAT words because I was studying for the SATs at the time, I remember. And, you know, I have this whole collection of love letters to a person that was a fantasy that just didn't, it wasn't a real, it was like an archetype.
Oh,
of a
he
boy.
Was real.
He was real in my head. He's out there somewhere, I'm telling you. I just don't know where. So that for me is sort of the crux of my mortified experience and the pieces that I share is the fact that I had the strong desire to be part of a world that I didn't really understand. And so I channeled all that into my diary.
And before you did that and, stepped up and shared that on a kind of mortified stage, a mortified concert, mm-hmm. I guess you call them. Had mm-hmm. you shared those stories that specifically with anybody?
Never, never, ever, ever. I kind of died a little the first time I went up and did Mortified because I was so terrified. You know, you look at these things and you're so embarrassed for yourself and you're embarrassed for how you behaved and how you felt as a teenager. And the last thing that you want, even as an adult, is for anyone, much less an audience full of strangers, to think that you're not cool. And so it's funny, the first time I did Mortified, I read one of these letters that I had written to a fake boyfriend. And when I was in the middle of my piece, I looked out in the audience and I saw a girl that I had gone to high school with sitting there in the audience. And she was one of the girls who had been, you know, popular and beautiful. And I was scared of her when I was a kid. And I saw her while I was in the middle of reading this incredibly embarrassing thing. And for a minute, I sort of became that teenager again, like afraid of this popular, beautiful girl that was sitting in the audience.
Except now she was rooting for you.
Exactly. So it all came full circle. And it was very cathartic, actually, to see her applaud and see her smile and, you know, have her think of me as...
You
as
controlled
a funny,
her.
Well, just a person. Yeah, right. That's right. She was under my spell for those 5 minutes.
Or you're cool as an adult through revelation. I mean, I've got an email here from Sherry in San Francisco, who I guess has done the Mortified stage sharing performance there a few times. She's got a football coach cheerleader saga that she tells. Oh, boy, I don't know. But she says, you know, it feels incredible telling it on that stage. And she says, Mortified makes me feel at one with people. I mean, David, I guess that's the old truism that you tell your deepest, darkest secret that you think nobody else could understand. And it turns out everybody understands it. Everybody's got their stories, their secrets. Everybody gets it. It's universal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there really is something comforting about, and I've heard Sherry's piece several times in San Francisco, and, you know, her experience of being a cheerleader who winds up really dark piece, but like dating a football coach at some point, is not one that I can relate to, having neither been a cheerleader nor a football coach who was creepy. And so, but there's some core underneath that story, that underneath her diaries, that you can relate to. And that, I think that sort of central, you know, that sense of universality is what I think is really captivates people about Mortified, and you know, and sends them to getmortified.com to want to participate.
There's a very This American Life quality about this. I mean, Ira Glass found out a long time ago how this works.
We've been on that show a few times, yeah.
Yeah.
Sarah, I think, Sarah.
I was going to say, just to elaborate on what Dave was saying, I feel like so many of the more successful Mortified pieces are the ones that really capture a broader story, like a bigger story arc. And I think that while I was never a high school cheerleader that, you know, had a crush on a football coach or football player, I can completely identify with longing for and yearning for someone that it was totally inappropriate for me to have those feelings for. And so even though I've never been in Sherry's exact situation, I can completely identify with the sensibility behind her piece and behind her experience. Mm. So I think that's part of what makes Mortified such a universally understood project, is that you can identify with the, or most people can identify with the sort of broader themes of people's pieces.
Well, if you're 20 plus, you've been a teenager. Everybody.
That's right.
Cambridge, Massachusetts. Yeah. Sarah, you're on the air, Sarah. What's your story?
I love this idea about Mortified. I just wanted to share a quick story. I have several mortifying stories from my teenage years, but the one I wanted to share was I was in ninth grade. I was in a school play first semester, freshman year of high school, and it was a Midsummer Night's Dream, and I had a small role. I was a fairy, and I had to wear this aqua blue lycra, like, jumpsuit that was really skin tight, and I had wings, big wings.
Oh, great, yeah.
And I had this huge crush on this guy who was a great actor who is, you know, also in the play. He was, went to my school. And so at the end of the play, at the end of, you know, opening night, we kissed backstage. And it was my first kiss. I had no idea what I was doing. I loved him desperately, as only a 14-year-old girl can. And I had just so much spit and saliva going on, and there was like wetness everywhere all over my mouth. And he said,
"Sounds very romantic."
Yeah.
And his comment was, "That was interesting."
Oh, slip sliding away.
Yeah, he was the nicest guy though, and actually, it was such a good actor that as an adult, he went on to be he starred on a popular soap opera for several years, and we're now Facebook friends, so it all worked out in the end. So.
Hey, he grew up to be on TV and, like, kiss people for a living.
Hopefully you got a little better at it.
Thanks to you.
Right.
I hope I got a little better at it, too. But
that's great. A little juicy, but it worked out one way or another. I had one just the opposite. I was crazy about Becky and gave her such a kiss at the door of goodnight. Of course, it was, you know, this is early teenage years. It was on the cheek. She was experimenting with makeup and had on so much pancake makeup that when I finished this big bust on the cheek, I could not speak. My mouth would put the makeup, and that was the end of it. We got so many callers in here. Shannon, who, you know, was a girl on the boys' baseball team, a basketball team playing on the court. At the end of the game, found out the cheerleaders on the other squad were all talking about what a cute boy that was. Oh boy, that'll work.
Oh,
my own producers, you know, who had
that's
their
not good.
Right had their, a girlfriend in middle school, dating for 4 months, but never did anything together, never exchanged words outside of school, broke up by a note in the locker. That was the first great love, you know. Totally,
that's amazing.
What's the word? Requited, more than unrequited. And they keep coming, David. I mean, does the tenor of these stories change over time? Is it eternal, the teenage mortification?
Yeah, I think it's eternal in terms of, you know, whether it's diaries from somebody in the 1950s or, as you heard with that AOL reference, of somebody in the what I assume is the late 90s. It's that same kid underneath, and you know, in the two books that we have out. You can really kind of get a range of those experiences, and you know, hear stories from whether it's the East Coast or the West Coast or from various generations.
And you've got a movie coming out, the concert version thereof. We'll look forward to that. When will we see it?
Well, we're going to be shooting that in early 2011. We're really excited about that. But if anybody wants to find out anything about Mortify, they just go to getmortified.com and they can learn about all of our projects.
David Nadelberg, founder of Mortified, thank you so very much for being with us
this
hour. And Sarah Faith Alderman, it's been great having you. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
We're going to go out. This is for Andrew in Buffalo. You heard him here. He sang it to his girlfriend at length on the radio, but she never became his girlfriend.
Well played.
Do You Want to Know a Secret by the Beatles, with fondness for all teenagers and their mortification. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. Thanks for joining us.
Do you promise not to tell?
On Point is a production of WBUR Boston and NPR.